Segment, I think, this morning. Should do a count, find out how many we actually got through. Well, nice to see everybody here this morning. Certainly a relief today to have cooler weather, especially if you consider how warm it was last Sunday. That was amazing. Even the air conditioners weren't doing much for us then, but that's okay. Yeah, so today, of course, welcome to those listening online. We are continuing our online series, Journeying with Abraham, where this week we're actually going to be looking at him, the concept of seeking a destination, which is very much something that was tied up with the journeys of Abraham. And starting off actually, but I don't want to spoil anything, but actually started with his father. Just looking at this series quickly, before we get into our singing, in December, our journeys will be with Abraham. The lessons that we can learn from his life. In January, which is right around the corner, 2026, we'll be journeying with Jesus. And then, of course, in February, we'll be looking at Paul's journeys as well. Like I said last week, we did actually do Paul's journeys a number of years ago. And it was really interesting just looking at all the places he went right throughout Asia and spreading the gospel, which was wonderful. Anyway, let's hand over to the singers now, and we'll start off with all of my days, but I'll let you introduce that, Lily.
Okay, thanks, Ben. If everyone would like to stand up, our first song is Surprise, All of My Days. Well-known one to start us off with. Our second song for today is Days of Elijah, also a bit of an oldie.
Thank you.
Very fun. Our last song for today is Desert Song. Today, everyone, you can all take a seat.
Good, thank you very much, band and our singers. Couldn't resist putting the desert song in there today because I feel like so much of the Old Testament is set in the desert. You know, in the wilderness out there, wandering around in the sand and the where there's not a lot of greenery, that sort of thing. Maybe a pomegranate tree here or there, that sort of thing. I don't know. What do I know? I wasn't there. But today I thought we're looking at Abraham's journeys, I guess you could say. Well, really the whole series has been about journeying with Abraham, but we've been looking at the different aspects of his life. First of all, the promises that were made to him, the calling that was made to Abraham, first of the calling to come out from his family, come away from his family, and then later on changing his name with the promise, of course, that he would be the father of many nations. Then we saw, of course, well, one thing that Abraham is known for is his patience. And he's certainly a great example of that, where it was decades and decades before we saw the promises that were, that were promised to Abraham actually come to their fulfillment. And then, of course, we saw the disaster that happened with Hagar and how Sarah and Abraham tried to take matters into their own hands. So that was last week. That was last Sunday that we looked at that. And this week, of course, we're going to be looking at the destination, the fact that Abraham was a pilgrim on the earth. And I think that was another defining point for his life. Of course, Genesis 12:7, we see that one of the many examples of the Lord appearing to Abraham in Genesis 12:7. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, "Unto thy seed will I give this land." And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And so, you know, despite these promises, Abraham was still very much a stranger in his own land, I guess, a land that was promised to him, a pilgrim on the earth, as we see it described in Hebrews chapter 11 there. So let's get into today's presentation. And we'll start this morning, as usual, by repeating the Lord's Prayer from Luke chapter 11, if you'd all like to bow your heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Now, this is a lovely little title page that I got ChatGPT to do for me, which is great. All original pictures there, which is good. One thing I found it isn't very good at, though, is maps. Now, this one isn't too bad, but you'll notice in the next one that comes, you'll see that something's a little bit amiss. So you'll just have to see whether you can spot that when we get to it. Now, the journey or the story of Abraham's journey sort of starts a little bit further back than Abraham's story. It starts really with his father in Genesis chapter 11, I think. Now, a little bit of background here. This is not long after the flood. It's actually what we actually find is that the Tower of Babel, which was soon after the flood, was only really within a few hundred years of the time when Noah came out of the ark. And what we saw in that time is the people again started turning against God. And one of the people that is actually singled out as being a ruler at the time was a fellow by the name of Nimrod. Now, he's not exactly mentioned in this chapter, I don't think, but there's a lot of discussion about the original move that Abraham's father made away from Ur of the Chaldees, which, of course, you'll notice down there is right at the top of the Persian Gulf. And the interesting thing is that he actually starts out by heading to Canaan. And there's no sort of background given here as to the reason why he did that. Do you want to drop the level into the church, Caleb? Not the pulpit, but the other one? Just so we get rid of the ring. I can speak louder, trust me. There's no background given on as to the reason why they actually moved. It's actually supposed that something happened to Terah's family, and that's the reason why they actually moved. So, of course, it says here. Actually, let's just read this section because that'll help give us the background, and it'll tell you the mythology or the story behind this, And and perhaps the reason why they initially set out, as you can see in verse 31 there, for Canaan. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the wife, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, she had no child. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. And they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan, and they came unto Haran and dwelt there. Now what's interesting is Haran is actually up there near Carchemish, and you'll notice it's not actually in Canaan. It's not actually in the land of Israel. So it's almost like they set out to go to Canaan, but then they sort of stopped halfway. They stopped in Syria. It's interesting that they picked Canaan too. I don't know the background behind that, but I thought that was really interesting that Terah actually decided he was going to uproot his family out of Ur and actually take them across into Canaan, but didn't actually get there. He actually stopped sort of more or less halfway or up there in Syria. They obviously followed one of the rivers up to there and went, this is far enough away. Now, all of the mythology or the fables are around what happened to Haran. And Haran died, because it says there in 28 that Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So there is actually a story that Nimrod actually killed Haran, which is really interesting. And of course, that means that Lot was left. He was left without a father. And so hence the reason why Terah first, and then of course Abram later, sort of took Lot under their wing, which is interesting. But anyway, that's a little bit of a backstory. We're not really given any, it doesn't sound like God intervened at that point and said, to Terah, you need to get out of here, go into the land of Canaan. But I do think it's interesting that he picked that location as their original destination. So anyway, bit of background. Okay, so Abram gets a little bit older. He grows up a little bit, you could say. He gets to the, average age, middle, sort of over the hill a little bit, 75. I've heard 75 is the new 45. I don't know. Once again, I'm not really there. 45 is definitely the new 25, hopefully. But anyway, maybe if you lived to 175, it would be. But anyway, we're talking about Abram's story anyway. Now, you may notice here on my AI-generated map here that there's something missing. Here we go, I'll click the other one. Observe. I think Cyprus is missing, right? See? And what was worse, in the map that it generated previously, I asked it to put in the Sea of Galilee as well. But I asked it, I told it to get rid of that right after it put it right next to the Mediterranean Sea name there. So we're not going to be taken over by robots just yet. It's okay. Let's read Genesis chapter 12, which is the account of, where God told Abram at the time to get out of the land, to leave his country and his kindred. Certainly a big step. Time to leave home. You're now 75. Okay. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came. That was a special verse, that one. It's very, sort of just repeats the same thing over and over. Now, you may recall that we had this particular quote, I guess you could say, or part of the or reading last week. But that was a different thing. That was more about the nations that were going to come from Abram rather than the journeys that Abram was to undertake. And we're going to include here verse 6 this week. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sichem, unto the plain of Moriah, and the Canaanite was then in the land. It wasn't just the Canaanite either. It was the Perizzites and the Jebusites and the Amorites and the, all of the otherites. They were also in the land as well, but particularly this was the land of Canaan. See also the Dead Sea's in there twice? That's great, isn't it? Okay. Let's not spend too long on that map. Keep going. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Now, I haven't included the rest of that chapter, because basically it talks about how Abram goes down into Egypt, and we have the little account of him saying to his wife, just tell them that you're my sister, getting into all sorts of strife and basically being sent out of Egypt, albeit with lots of riches as well. But interestingly there that Abram didn't build a house. He built an altar. It was almost like the only sure thing that he could actually build was something to do with his relationship with God rather than a city or a house or that sort of thing. And that's kind of a bit of a theme really for Abraham's life, which we'll get to a little bit later. Let's pick up the story from Genesis 13 now. And this is actually after he comes up out of Egypt. So this is his next journey. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, and unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar, which he had made there at the first, which he had make there at the first. Okay. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, and that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. So effectively there we have this little interlude where he goes off to Egypt, but then he returns again back to the place where God had appeared to him. It's almost like he went, okay, let's pick up the story again and we'll keep going from the last spot. Where it's like when you lose your children, isn't it? You go, okay, well, let's go to the last place that we saw them and see whether we can see what we should do from there. Let's keep going from verse 8. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me, and if thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right, or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, Even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. I've often wondered whether the Dead Sea, remember how with the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, which kind of happens in here in the middle, you know, and it rains fire and brimstone down upon Sodom and Gomorrah in a way that we just cannot even imagine. And I often wonder, you know, we have to take the Dead Sea, for example, it has all of these salts and minerals in it, which is unique to anywhere in the world. So it's certainly in that concentration and in that space. It's a very, very unique place. And I actually often wonder whether, I know it calls it the Dead Sea and things like that. Maybe that's historically looking back. Maybe that's when all of that was sort of established. I don't know. But anyway, I've often thought about that and what, and how that sort of came about, that whole Dead Sea area, whether it was related to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Anyway, let's keep going in 14. We'll see God's promise again to Abram. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. So once again, he moves and remains in his tent, but establishes another altar there to God. Interesting though, God promises him this land, but doesn't actually give him any indication as to where he should settle. He just says, just walk wherever you like. Let's skip forward another couple of chapters. Ishmael's been born. There's been a big upheaval in the family. Sarai and Abram have tried to take matters into their own hands, of course, to establish a lineage for Abram. And it's 14 years after that, and Abram is now 99 years old, and he receives yet another promise. Genesis 17. And when Abram was 90 years old and nine, the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God, walk before me and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but thy name shall be Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made thee. And I will make thee exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee in their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So a pretty amazing promise, and he's actually even confirmed it there with a change of name. As we also see a little bit later in that chapter, which I haven't included, Sarai gets a change of name as well, because she was to be the mother of many nations too. Our final reading this morning is actually from Hebrews chapter 11. And I thought this tied in nicely because of the discussion or the thoughts that are put forward here about the faith of Abraham and how it kept him going in a land where which was promised to him, but that he was actually still a stranger in. He had no fixed address, you could say. He was living in tents. So let's finally read Hebrews 11, 8 to 16. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Consider that a tent doesn't actually have foundations, does it? You have a tent and it's sort of, you don't have to do any preparation work except to find a soft rock to put it on, as I've heard somebody say before, or get rid of the rocks from underneath so that you're not lying on that. And so we see the reason here, Abraham was looking for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Verse 11. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to return, to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. So note that in verse 10, Abraham was looking for a city, and God hath prepared for them a city. All right, let's have a hymn now, hymn 92, which is Forth in Thy Name, which I thought was rather appropriate for today's journeying sort of theme, and one that I hope most people have memorized. I was tempted to leave out some of the words as I do, just to see how good we all are. It's good. It's a good thing to do. Hymn 92, Forth in Thy Name. Forth in thy name, O Lord, I go, my daily labour to pursue, thee only, thee resolved to know, in all I think, or speak, or do.
Resolve to know.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Michelle, for reminding me of that. To get some singers up here. Now, we do have one small reading here from Luke chapter 16. And it does relate to the whole living in tents, being a stranger, a pilgrim here on the earth, not really having received our final home. And it's a little excerpt from some of the teachings of Jesus in Luke chapter 16. I'll leave it, we'll see if we can find a link. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. That's actually, just as a side note, this is why I have a little bit of a problem with the whole concept of the anti-hero that has to happen in the in a lot of movies and things these days. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that's unjust in the least is unjust also in much. But it seems to be this like narrative out there in Hollywood these days that you have some black sheep who is a problem child and does the wrong thing, and then all of a sudden there's a flick of a switch and they become the good guy and save the world type of thing. I don't know. I kind of feel like that, grates a little bit against these sorts of concepts. It's not a real concept, is it? Perhaps we just like a good redemption story. I don't know. But if you've been faithful in that which is another man, if you have not been faithful in that which is another man, who shall give you that which is your own? That was kind of a little bit of a thought-provoking verse that I thought related to this whole concept of journeying. Now, Abraham had received a good many promises. We've seen that through our studies in this online series, whether it be of a seed and an inheritance, many nations coming from him, that sort of thing, whether it be a country, a land. But it sort of was only going to happen in God's time, really, not in his time. We see that he was told to leave his father's, so his kindred, his father's family up in Syria, and continue the journey on to Canaan. And yet, when he got to Canaan, God didn't immediately give him any sort of place where he could become that great nation, where he could set down foundations and build a city and things like that. Instead, he lived in tents. He just traveled from place to place, very nomadic, I guess you could say. Probably traveled wherever there was good grazing, I guess, probably for his many cattle and things like that he actually owned. And it's a really interesting thing because Hebrews gives us an interesting twist on this. It says that he desired a city which was built by God. Now, I don't know whether you've ever thought about it, but when God builds, he doesn't build houses and things like that. He doesn't actually physically build things, does he? His building is done within people, isn't it? He builds people's lives. He builds their relationship with him so that they can go on and be his hands and his feet. He builds the city in the people. Now, I thought it was an interesting thing when you look at, there's another verse which I didn't include today, which is actually where Jesus is talking about his crucifixion. And he's talking about him dying. He's basically talking about his sacrifice. And he says, "No man takes it from me," as in his life, "from him. I lay it down." And then he goes on and he says, "I have power to lay it down and I have power to take it again." Now, that to me is kind of the whole, shows that Jesus had ownership, I guess you could say, over his life. He had authority and ownership over his life. He had the ability to let go his spirit and then to make the body return to the earth, I guess you could say, or at least go to the grave, and then had the authority to bring it back again. He was in complete control. And that's what happens when you own something. That's what happens when you are actually, you know, when you own a car, for example. You have the right to take it apart and make modifications on it and, you know, buy little things for the back windows and that sort of stuff. You know, change the wheels, that sort of thing. But you don't have the authority to do that with a hire car, do you? Right? You kind of have to abide by the rules of the hire car company. You sort of lease the car. You're the steward of the car, you could say, or the tenant of the car. But at the end of the day, you know, you don't really have the authority to do with it as you please. And I thought this was interesting because if we were in Jesus' situation, Tom's going to scare off the birds, that's good. If we were in Jesus' situation, we couldn't say that we had power to lay it down and to take it again. We couldn't say that nobody could take it from us. And when we're talking about our life, right? And it's because we don't actually own our life. Our life is a gift. It's something that we're here stewarding over, I guess you could say. We're the tenants. We're the ones that are sort of directing it. You know, just like a hire car. It's a good example, actually, where you can take the car wherever you want it to go. If you go and take it on a dirt road, you're not supposed to take it on dirt road because your insurance says that you're not supposed to take it there, and you get a crack in the windscreen from a car going the other way, you have to pay for that, right? You have sort of stepped outside of the allowed rules for being the tenant or the steward of that car. And I think the thing is that our lives are very much like that. God has given us instructions for the way that we should run our lives. He gave Adam and Eve an instruction, didn't he? He commanded him to actually replenish, multiply and replenish and subdue the earth, didn't he? That was the bounds of his stewardship at the time there. Now the difference, and this is where the analogy of the hire car breaks down. If you obey all the rules of the hire car, you still have to give it back. But in the case of our lives, we're promised that if we're following all of the rules that we're supposed to be given for running this life, if we please God, we have that example, say in Enoch, where it says that, and that's in Hebrews 11 as well, that he pleased God and therefore God gave him the car. He gave him that city, I guess you could say, that dwelling place. Now, Hebrews is quite specific when it talks about cities, and it says that Abram, and it goes on and talks about all of the other, his descendants, they saw the promise. They knew what they had to do. Symbolically, they were living in tents. They hadn't established a city as such. They hadn't set down a foundation. We know the surest foundation is Jesus Christ. That's the best way to start building your city, right? Instead, they were living in tents. And we can see that they were mindful of the promises. They followed the promises, but it just wasn't for them. They died in faith, as it says, and didn't receive the promise. And I think the thing what's really exciting is that we know that there is that promise there of being given that city, of being built, having that building built by God within us, and actually being given that our life so that we can actually take ownership of our life. We know the promise is there. It'll be for the time appointed. It'll be for when it's God's choosing to do that. But it's our responsibility to live our life in such a way as we could be the ones that inherit those promises. Doesn't matter. People say, you know what? It's been 2,000 years since Jesus died. he's not coming back, you know, that sort of things. These are the mockers, the scoffers. That doesn't change anything. The disciples lived, who lived at the time of Jesus, they lived as if he was coming back again within their lifetime. And we need to be doing the same thing. And we have a little bit of more of excitement, I guess you could say, or in that we actually see, we do know that there is a time appointed for the restitution of all things, for everything to be brought back to God again, for the enemy that is within the city, the evil that is within the city to be cast out, and for it to be able to become that great heavenly Jerusalem, which is a city again made up of a special group of people. And so I think the thing is that we can look to the example of people like Abraham and consider the way that he lived his life and the focus that he had. I think one of the most lovely things that was said about him is that he was known as the friend of God. And if I could be known as the friend of God, man, I don't think I would be totally happy with that. I think we all would be, to be known as one of God's friends. But if we look at his example, look at how he knew he was in the land of promise. He hadn't been given a firm place, a firm piece of ground. He didn't own anything yet as such. But he still knew that the promise was there. And it's like that with us. We know that the return of Jesus is coming. We always look at the things going on in the world around us and we think, is this it? Is this the start? Is it going to be soon? And I don't know. I firmly believe that it will be in our lifetime, that that will happen. And so for that reason, I think it's a wonderful thing for us to, like Abraham, enact our faith to hang on to those promises and to actually live our life in the ways that he would have us to live, within those bounds of the hire car, I guess you could say. And maybe we'll just be given that car at the finish, at the end of our term here with that, or when he actually returns. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was interesting that despite the fact that Abraham had been given a destination, said, go here, do this, operate like this, he still hadn't received the promise. We're much like that here on earth. We've been told, do these things, enact your life in this way. We haven't seen the fulfillment of the promises. But like Abraham, we basically live our life in expectation that those promises will be fulfilled in us and in our lives here on earth. And I think that's a pretty good way to live. Certainly Abraham, as we read, was blessed throughout his lifetime. And that's not something that everybody gets. We don't all get riches and wealth and things like that. We all have our troubles. But I think the knowledge that we could be known as the friend of God is about a greater rich than a rich. It's a greater wealth than any of us could ever hope for. So with that in mind, let's have our last hymn this morning, which is hymn number 6, which I thought fitted in very nicely with the with the promises that we're to be given. Thanks, Michelle. Hymn number 6, who can describe the joys prepared for those who love with one accord to obey the word the Lord has given, who dwells above enthroned in heaven. So that brings us to the end of our Journeying with Abraham segment in the summer series. And of course, next week it'll be 2026, which is a bit hard to believe. 2025 certainly went pretty quickly, if you ask me. And perhaps the thing for us to remember is from Luke 16, which we read this morning. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And choose this day who you will serve. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Thanks for everyone for coming and for those joined online. And we'll look forward to seeing you all again next week.